Chapter 3, Why Kids Are Parent Deaf. If you're not conscious of each part of yourself, you will have the experience of wanting to say or to intend one thing and finding yourself saying or intending something else. Gary Zukav, The Seat of the Soul. You're talking on the telephone to your mother. Your four-year-old interrupts. You intend to teach her proper behavior when you're on the phone. You say, "Don't interrupt, I'm on the phone. Now leave me alone and go play by yourself till I'm through." She begins to cry, demanding you even more. Nothing you try gets her to stop. If she does leave, she goes into the other room to bop her brother over the head to ensure your arrival. On the other end of the line, your mother tells you what she needs is a good spanking. You yell at your daughter to stop crying, stop hitting, just stop. She covers her ears and will not listen. You end up making excuses to your mother, hanging up the phone, and dragging your daughter off to her room, both of you locked in a power struggle. What happened to your intentions? Not to mention your child's intentions. Neither of you planned on screaming at each other and feeling miserable. Your child's agenda may have been to make sure you were there for her, to avoid feeling alone and ignored. She doesn't like knowing that when the phone rings, you are instantly unavailable. She may feel scared or angry. She needs reassurance. Her agenda is loaded. Her intention is to get that reassurance. Your initial agenda was to talk to your mother. Your intention was to teach your daughter not to interrupt. You think her demands were just for attention and that she was being rude and manipulative. Your agenda got loaded and your button got pushed. Your intention was lost altogether. It didn't make it easier hearing your mother's admonitions on the other end of the line. Parent deafness. After all is said and done, you end up in a puddle of guilt, locked in a struggle between your mother's voice, your daughter's needs, and your best intentions. Your daughter feels unheard, blamed, and angry. You feel resentful and out of control, and while you know you should not be saying or doing what you said and did, you say and do it anyway. Your child becomes parent deaf when she does not want to hear what you have to say. Your intention has turned to anger and punishment, and your daughter has learned nothing about interrupting. Depending on her temperament, she will either fight harder to be heard or withdraw silently to stay out of trouble. Our best intentions get lost in the gap. The gap is the space between the message the parent intends and the message the child receives. A seemingly clear statement of direction is often ignored, disputed, or rejected by a parent deaf child when that message turns into something the child does not want to hear. It works the other way as well. The child's button-pushing behavior is intended to send a message to the parent. It's a cue to the parent that something is wrong. But when the behavior pushes a button, the parent is unable to understand the intention, takes the behavior at face value, and reacts to it. The child's message to the parent gets lost in the gap as well. We cannot expect our children to look for and understand the intention behind our reactions. But it is our job to look beneath our children's behavior for their intentions, rather than taking the behavior literally. Our best intentions can plant seeds of hurt. While waiting for a bus, I witnessed an interesting yet ordinary occurrence between a mother and a child. The mother was waiting for the bus with her toddler, who was sitting in a stroller in front of her, facing out to the street. At the time I started paying attention, the little girl was getting fussy and frustrated, making whining sounds and straining her body to look behind at her mother, trying to get her attention. Her mother chose to ignore her. As if a veil had descended, she removed all expression from her face and focused on the direction from which the bus would eventually come. As soon as her attention disappeared, the child began to cry louder and strain harder in her seatbelt. She grabbed one of her mother's fingers resting on the back of the stroller. The mother briefly glanced at her and, in what I thought would be a compassionate gesture, took the little girl's hand in hers, pressed it away as if it were distasteful, removed both of her hands and put them in her lap out of her daughter's reach. Unmoved, she continued to watch for the bus. I recall vividly a conversation I had with a friend of mine about why he had always had a hard time loving or physically responding to his mother. He told me that he was convinced that she didn't love him. Since to me it seemed as though she had given him so much, I asked why he had that impression. He said, "All my life I have lived with a very clear memory of reaching my hand up to her and her pulling her hand away." I find sadness in how ordinary these stories are. I don't know the circumstance of my friend's memory. Surely there was more contributing to his resentment. But I'm sure the mother at the bus stop was intending to teach her child that she couldn't get away with what she wanted by crying, whining, and banging on the stroller. She might have purposefully ignored her daughter, assuming that she would learn to act more sociably in the future, or perhaps her mind was on other things, and she just didn't want to be bothered. If the bus had not come when it did, I might have seen her child turn back in her seat, maybe cry for a while longer, but eventually stop. To this mother, to many mothers, this would have seemed a small victory. She would have believed that her tactic had worked. It's likely that my friend misunderstood the withdrawal of his mother's hand as a withdrawal of her love. The gesture may have had a similar intention to the bus stop mother's, to stop the child from being disruptive. The message my friend received, however, was quite different. What would have happened had the bus stop mother chosen to comfort her child and pick her up? Would the child have learned that she could easily manipulate her mother into getting what she wanted? Would the mother have spoiled her by giving in to her demands? Would she be trapped from then on into always giving her child whatever she wanted? I don't think so, but it feels like a risk to many. I think the child would have felt understood. In her pre-verbal stage of development, she would have gotten the message that her signals of distress to her mother had been heard and attended to. She would have had faith in her ability to communicate her needs, and she would have felt cared for and important, that her agenda mattered too. Is this bad for her developing social skills? How many of us have memories of, or more likely cannot remember, similar instances in the throes of which we too decided in our childish analysis that we were not loved or accepted? In that moment, connection was broken for this little girl. The gap widened. There was no abuse, none that we would have labeled as such, but the subtlety of such a small gesture can be damaging when repeated again and again. It is highly unlikely that her mother's intention taught her that next time she should sit quietly in order to get the attention she desired. It's more likely that her mother's gesture led her to think that she was bad for wanting her mother and that her wishes were unimportant, at least in that moment. But moments add up. Digging the gap. With all best intentions, we dig the gap ourselves. Our intentions filter through our agendas, get lost in the gap, and come out the other end to our child as a different message than we intended. Our child doesn't like the message he hears and turns parent deaf. We can turn it around by becoming conscious of all the steps creating the gap and send the message we intended in the first place. How many times do I have to tell you not to take food into the den? Pick up your plate and take it to the kitchen, Margaret says to 16-year-old Ethan. It's anyone's guess whether or not Ethan will comply. The answer lies in the message Ethan receives. If Margaret is relatively undisturbed by anything else in her life right now, has a rather calm agenda, and is just mildly annoyed by the fact that Ethan has food where he shouldn't, and if Ethan is feeling relaxed and holds no grudges against his mother at this time, chances are good that the food will be taken to the kitchen. However, if Margaret has had a bad day at work following an early morning argument with her husband, if she's feeling frustrated with Ethan over a recent rebuke, if this is the umpteenth time she has asked him not to take food into the den, if she had to work too late to make it to the grocery store, if her agenda is loaded, then her tone of voice and body language will add a great deal to her message. Her emotions will color her request as well. If she's feeling angry, used, and taken for granted, the same words will carry a different meaning across the gap to Ethan. Ethan could feel guilty and a little chagrined that once again he forgot about having food in the den and take his plate to the kitchen without a fuss. Maybe even wash the dishes he left in the sink. But if Ethan is upset about something that happened in school, is sick of his mom nagging him, has just had a fight with his sister, who never gets in trouble for anything, plus he's hungry and has a temperament that requires quiet after a day filled with noise and stimulation, if his agenda is loaded, we can be pretty sure he will become deaf to his mother's request. A gap develops between these two people. Words and intentions get convoluted and warped, miscommunicated and misunderstood. A direction from Margaret might be heard as a request, a reprimand, or an attack by Ethan. How it is sent depends on Margaret's agenda. How it is heard depends on Ethan's agenda. Their agendas affect each of their perceptions and determine the width of the gap between them. It's all in the interpretation. Even though the intention is lost in the gap, the sender still expects the receiver to understand the original intention and respond cooperatively. In Ethan's case, if his mother tells him to keep his food in the kitchen, but it gets distorted by her agenda, Ethan might hear, "You're a slob, you never listen, you're incapable of doing anything worthwhile." Ethan will react to his interpretation rather than to his mother's intention. He will likely block what he does not want to hear, become parent deaf, and continue to eat in the den. However, Margaret still expects Ethan to do as she has requested. She reacts further when he does not comply. The vicious cycle spins, the gap widens, connection is impossible. Well, isn't it their job to listen to us? Who's in charge here anyway, is the lament of the frustrated parent of a parent deaf child. Think about it. Are you motivated to listen to someone who you think is putting you down, blaming, or judging you? When little children cover their ears and walk away, when older children act as if they've not heard, when we complain that they never listen, it's because they don't like what's being said. They're trying to uphold their integrity. No one wants to cooperate with a tyrant. We do not have to change what we're asking, just the way in which we're asking it. Clearing your agenda and narrowing the gap. The more you're able to put aside your personal agenda for the moment of interaction, and thus be more objective, calm, and focused, the better you will be able to see your child's need and point of view. Clearing your agenda does not mean changing your plans, canceling your appointments, and letting your child have her way. It means giving your undivided attention and making your child your priority in that moment. Putting your agenda aside for the moment is possible when you're aware that you actually have one, are conscious and honest about what it includes, and are willing to take responsibility for it, rather than denying it and blaming someone else for how it's affecting you. When you can step into your child's shoes, you're more able to hear how your words are landing. Think what you would sound like if you were your child. Would you want to listen to you? Margaret's agenda could include wanting the den to stay clean for a dinner party that night, insisting that Ethan obey her regardless of the request, or wanting to get him in the kitchen away from the TV. Ethan's agenda might be his desire to see a video he's been thinking about all day, feeling cocky over winning a battle with his sister, or feeding his hunger and vegging after a tough exam. If Margaret is able to clear her agenda, at least for the moment, she will be better equipped to empathize with Ethan. Her message will be clear and non-judgmental, and her expectation of his behavior will be more flexible if she takes his agenda into consideration as well. In turn, Ethan will be able to hear his mother because he will not feel blamed, and parent deafness will turn to parent awareness. Connection can happen, and cooperation is much more likely. If Margaret can genuinely say, "Ethan, I know you just got home and are probably hungry and tired," so that he does not expect a "but" on the other end, her empathy narrows the gap. She can then make a clear request and set the limit she wants without laying guilt or blame. The rule is no food in the den. You can either eat first, then watch the video, or vice versa. Ethan is more likely to hear the request as it is intended rather than as a judgment or a reprimand. Still, Ethan might have a loaded agenda and answer with a "yeah, yeah, in a minute," with no intention of moving. Or a more combative, "Mom, lighten up. What's the big deal? It's a stupid rule." There's no guarantee he will respond cooperatively. But if he resists, Margaret can take her next step from her cleared agenda, consider where he's coming from, and set her limit neutrally. "Ethan, I have just cleaned for the dinner party tonight. I need your cooperation. Please bring your food into the kitchen now. If he says, Mom, I'm zonked and starved. If I get food anywhere, I promise to clean it up. Her willingness to negotiate does not mean she's backing down. She is being as respectful of him as she expects him to be of her. Cooperation is more likely. She then needs to make sure he keeps his word with a gentle reminder if he forgets. Ethan, there are crumbs on the floor. Please clean them up before you leave. Behavior is our barometer, recognizing your child's agenda. It's often hard to uncover our children's intentions and understand their agendas because their development inhibits their ability to tell us clearly what they mean. Mom, I feel really put down when you yell at me like that. I would like you to tell me what you want me to do and then give me a few minutes before expecting me to do it is not something we're likely to hear from a 4-year-old, a 14-year-old, or many adults for that matter. Children tell us with their behavior what they need. It is our job to understand what that behavior is telling us. When we can't because our button has been pushed, the cause of the behavior disappears into the gap, and we misinterpret our child's intention, losing the opportunity to help. Behavior is the clue to our child's well-being. If the behavior is normal and age-appropriate, we know our child is doing fine. When behavior is inappropriate or out of control, that is our clue that something is not right. Behavior is always an accurate barometer of a child's internal emotional state. When we react to the behavior at face value by punishing or reprimanding it, we are ignoring the deeper emotional state that caused the behavior. It's like pulling up weeds without getting the roots. The behavior will come back. When behavior continues to get worse, that is the child's way of saying, you're not attending to what I need, so I guess I have to scream louder or hit harder to get you to see me. We may be giving plenty of attention, but if it's not the right kind of attention, and the cause of the behavior is still not addressed, the behavior will continue. Children do not scream, punch, or call names because they like to. They do it to tell us something. The cues they send us, from their first cries before language to their defiant behavior as teenagers, should be interpreted as calls for help, not as manipulative devices to get us. How would it serve them? They need us to take charge, to care for them, to be there. Why on earth would they want to get us? It's in their best interest to please us and cooperate. When they don't, it means they can't, and they need our help to get back on track. When we react, we're not listening. But when we acknowledge that their agendas might be loaded and take the time to find out what is going on emotionally, we can help them not only understand themselves, but know that we understand them. When they feel accepted, emotions, agendas, and all, behavior normalizes. When your button is pushed by your child's behavior, think about his intention beneath the behavior. See if you can get past the "he's doing that just to get me" perception to "what does the behavior mean and how can I help him?" Consider that your child has a problem instead of making him the problem. The opportunity for connection. If Ethan comes home with a loaded agenda, his girlfriend just broke up with him, he got a D on a paper, or he was not chosen for the basketball team, Margaret could say quite neutrally, Ethan, the rule is no food in the den. Eat in the kitchen or wait to eat later, please. And Ethan might still blow. Get off my back, will you? What's up with some stupid food in the stupid den? Leave me alone. Margaret then has a choice. She can either react to his behavior with anger and punishment for his disrespectful attitude, or she can try to respond to the emotions beneath his behavior with understanding and support and consider what his agenda might be. This is the point at which most well-intended parents would call for a punishment or a consequence. Margaret has clearly requested the rule to be followed. Ethan has reacted rudely. Margaret's response, I will not be spoken to like that. Either change the tone of your voice and eat in the kitchen, or I will not allow television after school for the rest of the week. You decide. Would be a perfectly appropriate consequence for the situation. If Margaret is unable to remain calm, chances are that Ethan will audibly grumble, loudly drop his plate on the kitchen table and probably leave it there when he's done, but the rule would be followed. Another option for a clear-minded parent is to acknowledge a window of opportunity and go for connection. Margaret would ignore his words and, for the moment, ignore the rule. She might say, "Ethan, this doesn't sound like you. Is something going on? I'd like to hear about it." He might open up and share what's on his mind, or he might say, "It's nothing," but his words will less likely be accompanied by a rude tone of voice. Whether or not Ethan wants to talk to his mother, he will hear the compassion in her voice. She will be far more likely to eventually hear about the girlfriend or the D if she is sensitive to his agenda instead of thinking only of her own and doling out a consequence. Consistency. All parents know they're supposed to be consistent, but most parents misunderstand what that means and judge themselves harshly when they think they're being inconsistent. Rather than look to the need of their child, they will stand on principle if a rule has been made or a no has been said, thinking they are being consistent. Children need to have a sense of predictability from a parent in order for them to behave in a way that can be expected. If one day Margaret doesn't pay any attention to food in the den because she's self-absorbed or too fragile to deal with Ethan's complaining and possible confrontation, and yet another day is furious about something that happened at work and takes it out on Ethan by reacting with rage at his defiance of house rules, he will feel like he's walking on eggshells. He will not know what to expect of his mother and thus will have a hard time learning what is expected of him. Margaret either needs to be in a calm place herself or have the ability to clear her agenda by temporarily putting aside her own stuff in order to be consistent from day to day. Her ability to communicate effectively, no matter how loaded her agenda is at the moment, is the consistency that she needs for Ethan to be able to hear and act on her intention. Consistency does not mean responding the same way to every misbehavior and never being flexible with a rule or changing a no to a yes. Consistency means that your expectations, ones that are conscious, realistic, and appropriate for each child as well as oneself, remain the same whether you are stressed or calm. Consistency means coming from the same reference point, an inner set of principles about parenting, regardless of what your agenda is at the moment. This takes time, knowledge, and practice. It requires the strength of one's convictions to handle problem after problem as they continue to arise and to remain strong yet flexible.